It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. The topic for today will be an overview of Bodhidharma's 10 grave precepts. And as you'll see, they each express an ultimate truth. So the literal version that we already studied in the fourth, I think, series on the precepts contains the ultimate truth version as well. The precepts contain both. The precepts themselves contain both, but we've only talked about the literal, the sort of the side that we use in our everyday life. But because they include both, and Zazen, by the way, includes both, then Zazen and the precepts are the same, even though they seem to be different. The 16 great Bodhisattva precepts, the three refuges, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts are all really just one precept: study the self. And that's exactly what we do in Zazen. Koben Chino Otogawa, he doesn't like to be called Chino Roshi, Koben Chino Roshi. He's the one, by the way, who died trying to save his child who walked into a pond from drowning, and then they both drowned. And it's just so sad. But it's also a perfect bodhisattva death. I hate to say that, but it was such a perfect bodhisattva act. And unfortunately, they both died. But whenever I mention him, I can't help but think of that. But this is the way, what I just said about the precepts being the same as Zazen and so forth, here's how he puts it. The 10 grave precepts were brought by Bodhidharma from India to China. Before they became 10, there were hundreds of rules of order for Buddhist life. These 10 are like 10 beads of light coming from the center and taking different textures and colors as if they become very radiant and they appear as one white light. Bodhidharma called it one mind, Yi Xing Kai Tai, one mind, precept body. I like that, one mind, precept body. He did not mean just this one mind, like our one mind, but entire mind, entire life. These are the 10 precepts. Zazen is to actualize that Buddha mind immediately. It doesn't matter whether you realize it or not. This is him talking. Bodily participation in Zazen itself is the proof. Zazen is the concrete form of the utter belief in who you are. And there is no thinking about it or about anything. Humankind and every single thing lives and exists fully in their best way. We may observe and see this growth process, but if we are within it, we don't see that process. So he's saying we can't see our own process and progress, but we can see other people's, but there is still the growth process going on. Every moment is the completion of practice. Every moment is the completion of practice. That's what he says. And so I'm saying that for a Zen student, the Bodhisattva precepts are not a side issue. They're at the core of awakening. And they offer not only to bring stillness and silence of sitting to bear on our everyday lives, but for also compassion to enter our lives. Shakyamuni Buddha and his successors agree that these precepts are not just ethical imperatives given by someone else that we should follow. They are the map of Buddha's world, and through them, we can realize ourselves as Buddha. I've said this before about giving you a sense of their seriousness. I've said this about the Bodhisattva initiation ceremony, but I want to repeat it because it's so powerful. That in that initiation ceremony, the preceptor gives the initiates the three refuges and asks them three times, from now on, and even after realizing Buddhahood, will you continue this truthful practice of taking refuge in the triple treasure, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha? And each time they say, yes, I will. And then the preceptor asks the same thing for the three pure precepts and later for the 10 grave precepts. And each time they say, yes, I will. And so the initiate actually makes a stronger statement of commitment in this Bodhisattva initiation ceremony than in a wedding ceremony. It's really powerful because they're saying, from now on, even after realizing Buddhahood, which we will all do, we're all on the path, we will all realize Buddhahood. Maybe not this lifetime, but we still will. Taking refuge means that you align and orient your life toward Buddha's example and toward enlightenment. You align yourself with the teaching of the enlightened ones, the teaching of selflessness, and the teaching of the precepts. You also align yourself with the community of those practicing in this way. So it's important to realize how precious the teachings are and how extraordinary it is that of millions and millions of people, you who are listening, are able to study the Dharma properly and fully. We talked about this last week. This opportunity is so rare. It's so rare and so precious. So moving on, so the precepts are for a bodhisattva, but what's a bodhisattva anyway? And the 8th century Indian Buddhist scholar Shantideva, many people just know Shantideva, and he said that an ordinary, I just love this, he said, an ordinary person's attitude is like a dead tree, and a bodhisattva's attitude is like a growing tree. A bodhisattva's commitment, merit, and development continuously advance. A bodhisattva's commitment and attitude continually advance, even while you were unconscious, and even while you're asleep or eating, while you were doing ordinary daily work, the inspiration of the bodhisattva continues to grow in you. I just think that's amazing. And I think it's because it's such a powerful vow. The Mahayana is called the great vehicle, but it's also called the Bodhisattva path, which means the path of awakened beings. So Bodhi means awake and Sattva means being. So Bodhisattva means awakened being. But what are you awakened from? Passion, aggression, and ignorance, also called greed, hate, and delusion. So we're awakened from greed, passion, aggression, it's hate or anger, and delusion or ignorance. So a bodhisattva is a person who has largely overcome what's called confusion. But confusion is a code word for misunderstanding the interconnected nature of reality. So whenever you hear that word confusion, that's what it means, that we don't understand that we don't exist as an independent individual like we think we do. So a bodhisattva has overcome confusion, which is that, and is committed to cultivating compassion and wisdom through the practice of the six paramitas. We've studied those in a series after the precept series, so that might have been the fifth series, and we will study them again, I think, hopefully the next series, because they're so important, and we've only kind of begun talking about them. So I want to talk about them at length again. And these are the transcendent actions in order to free all beings from suffering, including ourselves. These transcendent actions, the second of which is the precepts. So there's six of them. And the second one is moral and ethical behavior. So it's the precepts. And they are, so these are the six: giving, ethical behavior, patience, joyful effort, concentration, and wisdom. And transcendent means they are completely pure behaviors. They're completely pure. They don't leave tracks. And probably all of those sound familiar to you because we have gone over them. But I intend to have another series right after this one on those practices. And the Mahayana, which includes Zen, begins with the discovery of bodhicitta, the heart or mind of awakening. And so what is bodhicitta? Ultimate bodhicitta is the union of emptiness and compassion, which is the essential nature of the awakened mind. But relative bodhicitta is the tenderness arising from a glimpse of ultimate bodhicitta that inspires us to train in working for the benefit of others. And then again, why would I want to be a bodhisattva? And the answer is you already are. You already are. And I've read the following statement by Tenzin Roshi Reb before, but I so feel the truth of this that I'm just going to read it again. So Reb says, I propose that all sentient beings, by their deepest true nature, wish to meet and be intimate with enlightenment, to be intimate with their true, authentic nature. If they do not make a request for such a meeting, they are not asking for what they really want. Then they may feel distress and alienation because they are not acting in accord with the deepest wish of their true nature. It is our nature to be intimate with this pure Dharmakaya, this pure teaching, and all of its transformations that are offered for the benefit of all beings. Because true enlightenment is our nature, if we don't cultivate an active practice relationship with it, we are likely to be miserable sentient beings. He says this. In other words, our karmic consciousness, which is all we've got to work with, will not be properly oriented toward what will realize its deep true nature. So by way of beginning this excursion of precept study, I've also talked about John Dido Lurie before, who is deceased, but he developed his own program for Zen training called the Eight Gates of Zen. You may remember this when we talked. And he made a study of the precepts, one of the eight gates. So there's gates are entrances to the way. They're how to enter the way of awakening. And one of them is the precepts. And he says that the precepts are a definition of the life of a Buddha, of how a Buddha functions in the world. They're how enlightened beings live their lives, relate to other human beings, make moral and ethical decisions, and manifest wisdom and compassion in everyday life. And as we already know, the precepts are unique among religious ethical teachings in that they're based on the experience of no self. And at Zen Mountain Monastery, Lurie Roshi's seat, even as a lay practitioner, the intention to practice the precepts is taken as a very serious commitment. For example, when a student wants to make the commitment to live her life in accordance with the precepts, she may petition to become a Buddhist. And if she meets the requirements, she enters into a week-long special training to show that her aspirations and motivations what her aspirations and motivations for practice are. In effect, each applicant needs to clarify for herself whether she is a student. You have to be a student before you can be accepted as one. This is at Zen Mountain Monastery. It's on the East Coast. And the same is true for receiving the precepts in the ceremony of Jukai. That's this, receiving this, in Jukai, you sow your raksu, and then you participate in the ceremony, which I've talked about a bit a second ago, and then you get a Buddhist name from your teacher, and it's all written down on the back of your raksu. But it's not automatic. At Zen Mountain Monastery, it's not automatic. Before receiving the precepts, you have to have entered what he calls the second stage of training. By that time, the vows that are made during the ceremony serve to confirm something that has already happened, and that is the precepts have become a part of your life. The commitment and the practice are already functioning, and the ceremony just formalizes that. In the beginning, he says, the precepts are given and received on the basis of faith. At this stage, the student has no personal experience to prove that the precepts are, in fact, a definition of the life of a Buddha. That is, how no self, might function in the world of samsara. Continuing recycling life and death. All the student has is the teacher's word and the teachings to go by. But ultimately, the whole process is something that can only be done by each student individually. Lurie Roshi says that it usually takes several years for the precepts to really saturate one's life. And that ripening is called prajna, or wisdom, which is realizing that there is no self, that the self is empty of any fixed definition. Then wisdom begins to function freely and faith is no longer necessary. Your own experience verifies the precepts. And so what are the precepts? In the 16 great Bodhisattva precepts, there are the three refuges, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts. So that's 16. The three refuges are called the body of Buddha's mind. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. And the three pure precepts are called the shape of Buddha's mind. I vow to embrace and sustain forms and ceremonies. I vow to embrace and sustain all good. I vow to embrace and sustain all beings. And then the 10 grave precepts, which we're going to be talking about in this series, are, and this is the conventional understanding, and we'll be talking about both. This time around, we'll be talking about the conventional understanding and the ultimate meaning. And we can only get a kind of sense of that. We can't understand the ultimate meaning with our minds, but we can realize that there is that ultimate meaning, which makes, without that, these precepts are just sound like rules to follow. And these precepts are not just rules to follow. And so we'll come as we go one by one over each of these 10 precepts to see how they're not just rules to follow. But just in terms of naming them, so you know what we're talking about, there's not killing, not stealing, not misusing sexuality, not lying, no intoxicants, not speaking of others' faults, not praising self at the expense of others, not being possessive, not being angry, and not disparaging the Triple Treasure. Actually, we're doing Bodhidharma's 10 grave precepts, and he has two, he switches out two of those to two others. So that isn't this, it's almost the list that we're going to be doing, but not quite. And I'd like to read you what Kōbun Shinō Otogawa said to his students about the 10 grave precepts in Teishō's, in the midst of week-long periods of intensive sitting, sessions, basically. He never wrote anything down. He simply spoke from his mind and heart in the moment. And his words came very slowly. And you can feel the silence in them. You can feel the silence inside of him and inside of the sesshin, even in his words. So regarding the three refuges, he said, continually alert and sometimes nervous, you think, am I doing all right? Is it all right to go this way? When you totally admit you are as you are and totally trust in being, this triple treasure, this triple return to three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So you totally admit you are as you are, and you totally trust in being this triple return to the three treasures, that you always take refuge and you just take trust in that. Regarding the three pure precepts, he says, all three together mean embracing all existences. They are about how to include all existence within your life, how to sustain all good while quitting all kinds of wrong actions. The third one is embracing and sustaining all and every being. These three, he says, are a precise description of the contents of awakening, what is contained in Buddha's mind. In English, we say, first, to embrace and sustain right conduct. Second, to embrace and sustain every good. Third, to embrace and sustain all beings. In the Meal Sutra, we hold up the bowl with the spoon in it and bow. The first bite is for stopping all evil deeds. The second bite is for doing all good. The third bite is to save all existences. Finally, we say, all together, accomplish the Buddha way and start to eat. Regarding the 10 grave precepts, he says, I would like to introduce how Bodhidharma expressed right understanding of the precepts. He said, to receive is to transmit. To transmit is to be awakened. Thus, to be awakened in Buddha mind is called true receiving of precepts. This Buddha mind is what you call Buddha nature, or your true nature, the truth of your existence. The first line of each of Bodhidharma's precepts is, self nature is mysteriously profound. He meant that the truth of your existence is so delicate, so precious, so mysterious and wondrous, it is hard to know. No one can understand it, but it is occurring constantly in front of you. Usually we say my life, meaning the 50 or 70 years we have lived, in which one may feel I didn't accomplish anything or it had no meaning. Maybe you think, I do not understand my life. It's hard to perceive the whole figure of your life. This is still Koban Chino. Going through the precepts, I feel that it is kind of like kneading emptiness in your hand, like pizza dough, or you are making a cake, many kinds and shapes of cake. The Indian Buddhists had 250 precepts for monks and another 100 for nuns. The essence of each precept, whether there are 10, 48, or 1,000, is in each a very great effort to express something of what we are. These precepts are our actual basic functioning, the functioning of our awareness. Being aware of them, whatever occurs, we know the dualistic are changing dimensions of thinking. Even emotional reactions to things are all tentative. Even if we accept these reactions, we trust that the truth within us is not twisted. Even when you see suffering and helplessness of others, still you trust that they are basically fine and strong enough to go through their problem. When you say to yourself, this feels right, so I will do it, you are not relying on how something looks. Sometimes you think, that looks fine, but something is wrong. Awareness of the precepts provides a pretty straightforward standard. If someone blames you for something and you are doing right and fine, the blaming is like cool wind. But if you start to get confused and wonder, did I do something wrong? You feel the blame before it comes. The knowledge came to you already, from outside or inside. So that's the end of what he was saying during the session. And I just want to add that whether we exist alone or among all, these precepts express extremely kind concern, letting us know what truth is. Even though it remains the fate of language, that it cannot fully reach what is being expressed in words. The precepts are a clear and pervasive expression, looking toward the future, toward all directions, even toward the past, shining a bright light which reveals things as they are. If we do not pay full attention to people, to ourselves, to things, then the light of the precepts is pretty weak. It's when we're attempting very sincere, very serious communication, a precept reveals itself. I think that's really interesting, that when we're attempting very sincere, very serious communication, that's when the precept reveals itself. In this way, your true face reveals itself without defending or covering up with something else. Thus, you are revealed as an extremely honest being, bare-minded, powerfully realizing the precepts. It happens both by your instinct and by your intuition. So here are some of the most important points. First, that the 16 great Bodhisattva precepts, that is the refuges and the pure precepts and the 10 grave precepts, are all really just one precept, study the self. They're all contained in Zazen, the ultimate study of the self. Just really remember that. They're all, when you practice Zazen, you're practicing all of the precepts. Second, that Zazen is to actualize Buddha mind immediately. It doesn't matter whether you realize it or not. Bodily participation in Zazen itself is the proof. Zazen is the concrete form of the utter belief and who you are, and there's no thinking about it or about anything. Third, humankind in every single thing lives and exists fully in their best way. We may observe and see the growth process, but if we are within it, we don't see that process. Every moment is the completion of practice. I think that's kind of a, I'm sure that Ochogawa Roshi was enlightened, and I think this is a kind of ultimate truth that's hard for us to quite grasp, but yet there's a sense of correctness in it that I find there's definitely a sense of correctness in it, but it's hard to understand. Every moment is the completion of practice. The fourth most important point from today is what Shanti Deva said, that an ordinary person's attitude is like a dead tree, and a bodhisattva's attitude is like a growing tree. The bodhisattva's commitment, merit, and development, the bodhisattva's commitment, merit, and development continuously advance even while you're sleeping, basically. While you're doing ordinary daily work, the inspiration of the bodhisattva continues to grow in you. And fifth, the essence of each precept, no matter how many there are, 1,000, is in each a very great effort to express something of what we are. These precepts are our actual basic functioning, the functioning of our awareness. And lastly, Shakyamuni Buddha and his successors agree that these precepts are not just ethical imperatives given by someone else that we're supposed to follow. They are a map of Buddha's world, and through them, we can realize ourselves as Buddha. So we're only going to study 10 and imagine that through these behaviors and understanding the full breadth of these behaviors, we can realize ourselves as Buddha. I think it's really powerful. And so the basic point that everything I've said so far is these aren't just thou shalt nots, you know. It's not that. It's like realizing the mind of the Buddha and then becoming the mind of the Buddha ourselves. And so it has that no self truth that these precepts are based on, create this dimension of such largeness that we can't even conceive. And so that's why I'm doing this series. I feel like we all should immerse ourselves in at least the idea of this practice and try to move forward with this practice. And actually, I think you'll like it. It's very reassuring to kind of know beforehand what the correct way is. And so we can kind of sense more, did I do the right thing? Or, you know, I'm always asking myself, because it's so easy to make mistakes. And so here are 5 ideas for your reflection during the week. So first of all, I've said this again and again, it's important to realize how precious these teachings are and how extraordinary it is that out of millions and millions of people, you are the ones who are studying the Dharma properly and fully. And so the fact that we're doing this is so easy to pass over, and the fact of how extraordinary it is. So to please find a way of reminding yourself every day, remind yourself every day of how extraordinary this is, that you are going to be studying these precepts in depth. And second, as I mentioned in John Dido Luri's monastery, the burden is on the prospective student to show what her aspirations and motivations for practice are. And in effect, each applicant needs to clarify for herself whether she is a student. I mean, you have to be a student before you can be accepted as one. So the second idea for your reflection this week is, if you were a prospective student at Zen Mountain Monastery, what would you say your aspirations and motivations for practice are? And third, Luri Roshi says that it takes several years for the precepts to really saturate your life. And that this ripening is called prajna, or wisdom, which is realizing that there is no self, that the self is empty of any fixed definition. And for your reflection this week, I'm asking the question, why do you think this takes so long? What is the core of the difficulty? And when you answer this question, could you start working even in small ways at overcoming it? So what's the problem? Why can't we just have this right now? Okay, that's the third question. And fourth, in trying to explain why Bodhidharma begins each precept with a statement, self-nature is mysteriously profound, You'll see each and every, all 10 of them begin with that sentence. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. Cobuncino said that it's hard to perceive the whole figure of your life. And so on the eve of undertaking study of these 10 precepts, how do you perceive the whole figure of your life? And write the answer down. This one you should write down. How do you perceive the whole figure of your life? And then lastly, for this week, if we do not pay full attention to people, to ourselves, to things, the light of the precepts is weak. It's when we are attempting very sincere, very serious communication that a precept reveals itself. So for this week, where would you place yourself on this scale of weak to full attention to people, yourself, and things? People, yourself, and things. Is your attempt at communication sincere, moderately sincere, or careless at best? Because it's good to know your starting point. Where do you fall on the scale of weak to full attention to people, yourself, and things? That's that question. And all these questions are posted, so you don't need to remember, but for sure to, if you don't remember, for sure to make a point of looking. I wonder if there are questions.
Yes, Kale. So the first question that we got is, my understanding of the Sangha is that it is an organized group of other Buddhists. Is it possible with the teachings now available through the internet to instead interpret the Sangha as the entire world and to take refuge with it? Or is it participation in a formal group of Buddhists with take refuge in the Sangha means?
The Sangha is all practitioners of the Buddha way. All practitioners of the Buddha way create the Buddhist Sangha. When you join a group of fellow practitioners in person, the immediacy and truth of the teachings completely saturate your life. There's almost nothing else that you think about. Everything you do becomes an act of service to the Buddha and the Buddha inside you. And development along these lines is speeded up, put it that way. But there is no question that the Sangha is more than international. I think it takes place on in other realms, other worlds. There's also enlightened ones, and people who have practiced forever and who continue to help us, actually, also. You mentioned the internet. It, not to exclude those who need to use the internet for connection with others. And there are many, because of the pandemic, many, in fact, I think probably all of the in-person groups, all across, at least all across America for sure, and I'm sure in Europe as well, have programs, even to do Zazen, even so that you can do Zazen with others, times all throughout the day. There are definitely ways you can do that. In various different groups, including the one I mentioned of John Dido Lurie Zen Mountain Monastery on the East Coast. I think they have Zazen at different times during the day. I'm not sure I answered your question, but I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next question that we have is, somewhere in the talk, I heard you say, we may observe and see the growth process, but if we are within it, we don't see the process. I think I can say frankly that I don't see any growth at all in this Zen process. It's discouraging. I guess I just have to have faith that something is happening.
You know, that's even what, if you recall, what John Dido Lurie says in the beginning, that's how it is. That is how it is. You just have to have faith. But go ahead and have it, because it does lead somewhere. But what I want to say, though, is, if you, and it's very hard to see our progress from the inside, but if you pick a time like your birthday, let's say, or New Year's Day, that from that day to look at how you were the year before, in anything, how you would handle something or how you would organize your life or just any, if you pick anything and then reflect on how you were the year before. And had you been practicing all that year, you might see some significant changes actually. And another way is we can use our intuition. I just feel like I've grown in such and such a way. You just know things you can just intuitively feel that even though you can't really see particularly, you can intuitively feel growth happening. And in the beginning, it's less profound. I don't mean worthy. I mean, profoundly seeable. Then later, the more you practice, the easier it gets. It's always hard to see your progress from the inside, but the more you practice, the more progress is easy, the easier progress is to see. And the other thing you can do is, like on your birthday, ask those around you, ask people who care about you what they've noticed. You know, have you noticed me change in any way since last year? And people are other people do notice, and they'll be happy to tell you. So that's what I want to say. It's not a done deal that you can only use faith. There's other means. Thank you, though. That's all.
So the next question we have is, what is the difference between a precept and an ordinary rule that tells us what to do?
Well, there's a big difference. And the difference rests in the ultimate truth side of the precept. So, for example, do not steal. So that's the precept, do not steal. And you think, I better not steal. But then there's the other side, which says it's impossible to steal because there is no individual self, and there is no other individual self. So there's nothing to steal and there's no one to steal. Actually, that's the actual truth. So we're just living the conventional truth, because that's how our mind isn't able to understand. We have to get beyond our mind, basically, to realize our self doesn't exist in the way we experience it. But most other if you look at any other religion and their ethical codes, they don't have this side that says, thou shalt not kill. But you couldn't kill anyway, even if you tried, because there's no you and there's no one else to kill. There's no killing possible. There's no killing life. So that's how our precepts are different. And we can only, using our mind, we can only have a sense of this other way, the other way to understand. But because we know that it exists, it turns the precept into something altogether different. And the difference is that it's about actualizing who we are. It's not about this rule that we should follow that someone made up. So it's all about deepening who we are, deepening our understanding and our experience of who we are. So that's why it's said that it's this is the activity. These precepts are the activity of Buddha's mind. This is how Buddha conceives of being in the world in a behavioral way. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So the next one that we have is, you said that Kobun Chino says that going through the precepts is kind of like kneading emptiness in your hand. I always get that feeling when ultimate truth comes up. What are we supposed to do?
You won't like this answer, but, since emptiness is you. That's who we are. We're empty of our individual independent self. Then the teachings that come, that it's like kneading emptiness in your hand, it's like kneading yourself. So we've talked about the five skandhas, that we human beings and really everything is made up of these five skandhas. Form, that's our body. Feelings, all the others are, so there's our body form. And then there's feelings, perceptions, mental formations, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Those five make up, those are the five skandhas, and none of them are permanent. None of them are permanent. So we are just, we're not permanent. And so when it comes to the ultimate truth, that it's like kneading emptiness in your hand, it's like kneading ourselves. Like, who are we? And rubbing different parts of ourselves to enliven them, and studying, studying what awakening means. But actually, the precepts are handy. They end up being handy, even though it's like kneading emptiness in your hand. The other side, the flip side, because both are there, is very handy, straightforward ways of measuring where we stand in terms of correctness, or where we stand in terms of Buddha's mind, put it that way. They're handy. Thank you. I think we're running out of time. I have two things to say. One is, please check out the new part of the website. At the bottom of the series, the names of the series, is a section, a new section called, and it's really beautifully designed by Brian. It's just wonderful. Called Questioning Beginning Practice, Questions and Answers. So there are questions and answers about practice, and you can, in the end, you can surf through them. But right now there are 10 questions and answers, and there's already 10 more that haven't been posted quite yet. But when you go to the website, you can just surf through. They're all interesting, and you can find one that really pertains to you, and just stop there and kind of, oh, like, okay, I should think of that way or something like that. Anyway, they're very, I'm making this, thinking that this will be quite useful to people. So to notice that it's new on the website. And I also want to thank my team, Brian and Sahar and Brendan, and also you, the audience, people who are listening today with me, and also people who are listening later. I so appreciate your attendance and your care. Thank you so much. Next week, we'll start the precepts per se. Okay, bye-bye.